You're listening to the Youth Crit Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Youth Critic Retrospectives. I am your host, Kiel Smith, and joining me today is Justin Mayhew.
Good afternoon, everyone.
And today we are going to be discussing Cliffhanger.
Sly Stallone, yes. Oh, man, I said I wasn't going to say that, but...
It's Sly Stallone making climbing mountains and...
Action movies, what else do you expect?
Right? Fighting international bank robbers?
Yeah.
Or something like that, I guess?
A jet money heist?
Yeah.
And the bad guy is John Lithgow with a British accent, Mike.
Is that a British accent? I couldn't tell.
I'm pretty darn sure he's supposed to be doing a British accent.
Oh my God, I couldn't tell. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. So for this episode, we are going to be talking about Super Mario Brothers tomorrow. We're going to release that episode in about 24 hours from now. But for now, we're going to talk about Cliffhanger, Sly Stallone's movie, the movie that came out on the same weekend as Super Mario Brothers, but also did exponentially better.
Right, this was actually a hit. I mean, this was Stallone was a box office draw. You know, he hadn't really,
right.
He's sort of semi-retired now, as far as I can tell. The Expendables is basically all he's doing nowadays. You know?
No, he's doing the Escape Plan movies.
Oh, he's with Arnold.
I don't think Arnold's in the next one, but...
Oh, okay. All
right. But he's doing that, and then he's filming Creed 2 right now.
Okay. But is he going to be in Creed 2?
Yes.
Okay.
He co-wrote the script.
Yeah. So, I mean, the last I really was thinking about was, like, Expendables 3 or something like that was the last, you know...
It was his last... I think it'll be his... Other than these escape plan movies, it will definitely be... His last like action. Well, you have to understand he's also in his 70s.
Right.
So yeah, he's getting a little old right now. But he's kind of finding a second light in those Creed movies.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But this was, you know, still when he was in his first iteration.
Right. But still, this was kind of after like Rocky V had kind of bombed because. Yeah. It was Rocky V.
What's the one where he was frozen and sent to the future with Sandra Bullock? Wesley Snipes was the bad
Demolition
guy.
Man?
Demolition Man. That wasn't too much later than this, was it?
He was actually filming this right after this. Demolition Man right after Cliffhanger.
So this is like the next movie.
Yeah, he did this and Demolition Man back-to-back.
Yeah, and that was pretty... I mean, that's memorable for most people.
It is because...
Sylvester Stallone movie.
It's more than just an action movie.
Yeah.
And you know what? I think we should talk about that eventually because it's actually kind of building its own little cult audience.
Right. I'm not a big fan myself, but I do know a lot of people who do enjoy that movie, so...
Right, yeah. But going to Cliffhanger, so Cliffhanger came out on May 28th or the 6th of 1993. It came out on that same weekend, around Memorial Day weekend, and it was a huge hit. And to give a little bit of background info, back in 1990, after director Rennie Harlan had finished Die Hard 2, and he was in post on Ford Verlaine, he got the script.
That's a forgotten movie right there. Well, it should be.
Probably so. He got the script for Cliffhanger, but wasn't really interested because he wanted to do other things other than action. So it took executive producer Mario Cazar to convince him to do it. And on top of that, he basically said, "Look, the Stallone is in it. Like he wants to do it." So him and Stallone basically rewrote the script to what it is. Yep. And the big draw for Harlan was the opening scene of the movie.
Yeah.
That was his big...
The actual cliffhanger.
Right.
Which is at the beginning of the film. And also, I would just like a side note here that there was a rock climber, author, and teacher, John... Can't remember his name right now.
Let me pull. I can pull it up.
He wrote a short story based on his own experiences, and then they expanded that into this movie from this actual rock climber's, you know, adventures around the world. So,
but yeah, it was. Let me see if Wikipedia has that.
It should.
John Long.
Yes, that's who it is. He's a climber, adventurer. And he wrote a novella that's, you know, roughly similar, and he pitched it to the movie companies. And
he wrote, I think it was more of a treatment.
Well, he had a novella, then he actually wrote a screen story for it, too. But it's sort of loosely based on a real dude, if you will. But Sylvester Stallone is very roughly based on this John Long fellow.
Mm-hmm. You know?
But yeah, the cliffhanger at the beginning of the film, which is interesting, where they put an actual... literal cliffhanger at the beginning of a film with some really, really shoddy carabiners. I'll tell you, those things are crap.
Oh, you mean the thing that holds
Yes,
up.
The little latch. It's not actually a carabiner. It's the slip latch, the friction latch.
Right.
And you see it many times. What did they build this out of, pewter?
It's just this poor girl's mistake that she just so happened to have it.
Well, that's the way it always goes, isn't it?
Yeah.
And if you're afraid of heights, if you are an acrophobe, you may be a little trepidatious about this movie. There's a lot of hanging off of very large rocks.
Oh yeah, I mean, here's the thing about this movie. I saw this on a little 27-inch screen in my house on DVD, and even then, I was still impressed by the cinematography.
Oh,
the way
cinematography is gorgeous. Yes.
How it was shot and angles, and yeah, there's still a lot of blue screen. They still use a lot of matte compositing for close-ups with the actors, but still, it's very well done. Like, and that's the big takeaway I have with Cliffhanger is everything about the movie is well executed.
Well, you know, Rennie Harlan of Speed, as we pointed out, is, if nothing else, a very assured action director. You know, he knows how to stage and choreograph and wrangle action.
For a while, he did.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is in that period, and I would say that if you're into Speed, then you would probably appreciate this. It's in the same era.
He didn't direct Speed.
He didn't? Who directed Speed?
John Labatt.
Okay, what did Rennie Harlan do? He did stuff later that the long
Kiss Goodnight. Yeah, he did Cutthroat Island.
Yeah, well, that one was terrible.
He did the fourth Nightmare on Elm Street movie. That was actually his first breakout hit.
Okay, well, Nightmare on Elm Street. I'm a big fan of those movies. So, John Labatt did Speed though.
Speed 2, Twister, Lara Croft, The Haunting remake.
Huh, that's interesting, because those other movies I don't really care for. Speed seemed a little out of character for the rest of those movies of John Labatt's.
Right. And so, yeah, I mean, and that was the big takeaway of Cliffhanger is it's impeccably well made, and you can see they went out in the snow. Mm-hmm. It's not like I look at Everest and I feel the movie about Mount Everest that came out a couple years ago.
Oh yeah, the recreation of the terrible blizzard that based on true life events.
Yeah. Yeah, and for me, it's so obvious, you know, when they're on top of the mountain. And I don't know if it's because it was so digital, it was shot on digital or whatnot, but it just but everything around them looked like plaster, or you know, it looked fake. Whereas in this movie, everything looked real. Everything looked compelling. Everything was, you know, shot and edited in a compelling way to where you couldn't tell that it was, where, you know, you just didn't linger on a shot long enough to tell, oh, it's just a miniature.
Well, I will tell you, if you didn't like the movie, it was kind of a real gloss over. The book is much more harrowing. The books that they based...
book that's based on, you know, Cliffhanger?
Everest, yeah, and you learn a lot of stuff.
Oh, okay.
There was an IMAX team up there on that mountain. during that a blizzard.
Right.
They had those, one of those gigantic 70 millimeter cameras with them, those monsters.
15 by 70 millimeter
huge.
Cameras.
And you got film that's, you know,
about the size of a fist. Inches,
yeah, wide. And this gigantic camera, they're hauling it around in this blizzard, you know, where these people are dying.
Right.
I mean, the whole thing is outrageous. And it's an interesting read if you read the backstory of the movie.
Oh, yeah. I'm not, like, saying the events were not compelling.
I was
just making a comparison.
Right. No, I agree. I'm saying that if you're interested in knowing about these events, read about it. You know, the movie is really just a gloss over. Yeah, I'm not.
Right.
The movie doesn't really. It really skims the surface and never. I think it's a PG-13 movie, and we have something
I think
like
so.
That. Yeah, and when you do something like that, like this movie is an R-rated movie.
Yeah,
and,
this is a hard R.
Because they say fuck all the time in this movie. You know.
And there's blood squibs.
Huh?
There's blood squibs in the movie.
Oh, yeah, lots. Like, and it's slow-mo. Rennie Harlan's got these almost operatic in slow-mo. The machine guns are shooting in slow-mo.
He did slow-mo.
The base jumpers are, you know.
He did slow-mo before Michael Bay and Zack Snyder.
I think maybe he took it from
Tony Scott?
The Godfather, you know, the slow-motion death of James Caan. Didn't they shoot that in slow-mo?
I don't remember it being slow-mo, but it could have been.
But there were a lot of bloods and squibs in that movie. Anyway, the production value is much higher on this than versus Everest. Everest is really, you know, like a Disney-fied version.
Sort
of
yeah.
You know?
I would say more Hollywood. It's a very Hollywood. And then...
Potato, potato, but I think we're getting at a similar thing. It's,
It's
really just a gloss over. It doesn't get touched too deeply. It pulls back the more disgusting, you know, heart-wrenching aspects. Like the guy, the Texan that walks down the mountain, you know, they only gloss over the fact they lost both his hands and both of his feet in that. He was walking on completely frozen feet.
Yeah.
In that. And they kind of just sort of, you know, kind of... You know, glide over it. They don't. You know, that's a horrific
you
thing.
See it
you
at
know?
The end of the movie that he lost.
Yeah,
he was a quadruple amputee at that point.
Yeah, I think he lost part of both his hands and all of his feet.
God.
You know?
So do you want to describe what Cliffhanger is? Because the opening is compelling, but for me, it doesn't match with the rest of the movie.
There's a good hook at the beginning with. Michael Rooker and his girlfriend are trapped on the top of a spire in this national park they're in, and he's wounded his knee, and they're waiting for a rescue. And of course, Sylvester and his pilot show up.
His pilot, and then another person shows up. And what happened at the opening is Michael Rooker makes it across just fine. You know, his strap or thing, whatever you said earlier it was, but it holds through because how they're saving them is they're basically creating like a zip line.
And they say, oh, it's because there's so much wind, but if you notice the camera, their smoke is going straight up. There's absolutely no wind.
Yeah.
you can tell there's no wind up there.
Yeah, and even with a lot of wind, you know, still a helicopter wouldn't make it up there anyway. Or it wouldn't have a good landing. And on top of that, it's still risky
you're
to
do a 4,000-foot zip line in the wind.
Yeah.
These both sound like bad ideas.
Yeah, it wasn't the brightest idea, but hey, you know, this is how we open the movie. Michael Rooker gets a class, but his girlfriend has a harder time because her buckle on her strap.
A friction buckle is twisting and like
it's just like loose. Yeah, it's tearing.
Yeah, you see the actual metal tearing, and it looks like it's coming apart like pewter. You know,
yeah,
like
it's coming apart like rubber.
rubber or pewter, yes. And she drops her stuffed animal down.
Yeah,
that
was attached to her. Yeah.
And it's a good piece of filmmaking. The foreshadowing, you know, of the
yeah, and it
falling.
Shows what's.
I like to nitpick. And
okay.
I would have done more of a Hitchcockian. Like push zoom or something from the top and watching this guy going down, you know, the sideways telephoto, you know, seemed not quite as effective to me as if they had seen the full, you know, impact of it going down into the gorge from above. You know, I was thinking
you would have had more
angle.
Shots of that because there are a couple of those.
Yeah, but they don't show it overhead. You know, they have a lot of telephoto, you know, from an angle
right.
from the side.
Right, tracking, for the dummy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, of the stuffed animal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I just I would have done a more stark angle on the stuffed animal to start with, to set up that, you know, fear and the building dread a little bit more, you know. But other than that, it's a fairly effective opening scene, and that, you know.
Yeah, it's extremely.
Spoilers, she dies.
Yeah, Sylvester, like, kind of, he ziplines his way over there to try and get her, mm-hmm. and try and maybe, like, get her back attached or put her on her, do something to, like, to prevent her from falling. And it doesn't, and in a shocking twist, and kind of, and I guess at the time there wasn't a Stallone movie where he didn't save someone or whatnot.
I'm not aware of one.
Because Harlan mentioned that he wanted to do a movie where Stallone just didn't save someone or couldn't. He did everything he could and still didn't work.
Yeah.
And he drops and he just can't hold on. He gets the glove, and of course the glove, you know, comes mm-hmm. off. And it's effective. I mean, Stallone, you know, yeah, like, he can't help it with his accent. He can't help it with the, you know, he can't.
You know, he's
never,
not. Yeah, it never really. I don't get the.
It doesn't bother me.
Really, yeah, I've never really had an issue with.
Like people do end up. I don't want to say stereotyping, but they kind of typecast him
in the tough, like what you were describing,
yeah, tough macho. But in that scene, it was like, it was effective. Like, you can tell that really, that, and you can tell in the following scenes that it, like, fucked him up.
Yes, and it did. And it, Michael Rooker is angry, very angry about
obviously.
It.
Obviously. Well, I mean, he's angry at himself and angry at, you know.
He blames both of them. He blames himself and he blames Walker, Gabe Walker, for it. Stallone's character, by the way.
Yeah, and it's a powerful, and, you know, those moments are powerful.
Mm-hmm. You know, frankly, that kind of fizzles out in the second half of the film when, after John Lithgow, the Englishman.
It fizzles once the movie gets started, once everybody gets together.
Yeah, that I would have liked a little bit, hang on to that as more of a subplot. Is Michael Rooker's character going to side with Gabe, or is he going to side with the bank robbers because of the past indiscretion? And they never even. That never comes.
They never touch on. No. They never touch on that.
It would have been an interesting little subplot about their character that they just kind of goes away, and that's kind of a flaw with the movie, I think. You know.
Yeah, that's my thing too. Because really, you could cut those. Really, I don't want to say you can cut those out, but it really, you know, the open. What happens at the opening?
Stays in the opening.
Yeah, it stays in the opening. It stays in the first act, and it never really pays off. There's another. Well, I mean, there's a moment in where Stallone's character has, like, his co-pilot or friend,
Jenny Turner.
There's a moment where she's hanging on, and then there's, you know, it's shot just the angles are just exactly like that.
But it doesn't involve the pathos of Michael Rooker. It's purely symbolic. It isn't plot driven. Then, you know. You know, it's just
it's a symbolism.
It doesn't have a B plot kind of an element to it there. You know,
right? But other than that, I mean, it stays in the opening, and it really, for me, I thought we were getting a movie like Vertical Limit, where, you know, maybe people got stuck on a mountain and Stallone and Rucker have to go up there.
You'll have to remind me what Vertical Limit was.
I'll tell you later.
Okay.
But I thought we were gonna get a movie where Stallone and Rucker were gonna have to, like, go up a mountain and have to save some people, and that was gonna be kind of the drama or the plot of the movie.
Instead, it's a heist movie.
Instead, we get this fucking jet heist movie.
Oh man, and John Lithgow is an Englishman. I just cannot get over that. Cut him fucking loose. And it's almost as bad as that, people. I'm not kidding.
You know, John.
You didn't even know he was trying to do an English accent.
I thought he was just being peculiar. Thought he was just trying to be an over-the-top Bond villain.
That's not trying. Lithgow is peculiar.
Yeah, I thought that was Lithgow just being trying to be like a Bond villain or something.
Well, how do you be a Bond villain except
peculiar?
British and peculiar.
Yeah. So I was just like, huh, this.
What?
Is...
What? How peculiar?
You know, but I mean, I will admit, you know, and this poor, you know, this agent, let me pull up his name real quick. This agent that's in the movie.
This is the Treasury agent?
Yeah. Travers, he fucks up so fucking badly. He fucks up.
One thing I was impressed with, though, during the heist, they cabled two jets together. What? But they actually did this in real life in the film. It's not computer animated.
Yeah.
It's not Matt. They actually had a real human being zip line between two jet airplanes, and they paid him $1 million to do it, people.
Yeah, and
it's real. It's a real stunt.
It is. It's going back to the, I mean, it was copied again in Dark Knight Rises in that prologue, but still, it's an incredible stunt. Like, that's why I say, like, I mean, the scene still has miniatures. It still has compositing and whatnot, but still, someone did that stunt
for
real.
This, at 14,000 foot in the air, strapped between two friggin' jet planes, this fucking moron, well, he got $1 million for it, so.
Right. Is that, this crazy, well,
this crazy,
know,
son of a gun, right?
Well, if you know what you're doing, I don't think you're a moron.
Right, but it's still, you know, I mean, that's some crazy shit right there.
That is.
You know, that's some crazy shit right there. And if you
don't see
the movie. And
that's a one-take kind of deal.
Right, and if you don't see this movie or anything else, just watch this movie to appreciate that gonzo bonkers stunt, you know?
It is, but still, we have to talk about the scene because it starts out brilliantly because we think like one of the people like in the plane, one of the like the senior officer that's like in the middle is like the one that's trying to take over everything, but then it's Travers turns everything on everyone. Mm-hmm. And then the, you know, co-pilot gets killed and the pilot's now driving, but Travers didn't shoot someone in the head. And so now this, you know, one officer sabotages the whole thing.
He's got his Uzi. He's shooting a Learjet with his Uzi.
Yeah. and basically, Travers just fucks up the whole thing.
Yes. And, you know, he says, how did you ever think this harebrained scheme was going to work? And I agree. It's like, why would you guys, you're out of your minds to think this kind of a complicated, ridiculous Rube Goldberg heist is actually going to work. So, of course, they lose the money. That's what's going to happen for the movie. Of course you're going to lose the money.
I mean, the chances of this working is like next.
Nil? Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, what? Why? Why would you? This is, I mean, how desperate are you? How bad is college fun?
This is the plan to rob a jet that Johnny Knoxville would have come up with in Jackass. That's how ridiculous this heist is.
And of course they land and no one gets severely hurt.
Well, they crash land.
They crash land and thank God no one gets hurt. Yeah. Everyone makes it out okay, even though there's like a chance. There's like, I guess, like, they dumped the fuel or something before they did that.
And they had no hydraulics because the hydraulics were gone. The guy with the Uzi had almost shot their pilot again. You know, all the windows were shot out. I mean,
Jesus Christ. Like, these people are lucky and unlucky at the same time.
Yep.
So, of course, they trick Rucker's character and Stallone's character up there to go and save them and basically be their guide to get their money.
Yeah, yeah, they use the beacon to call it like a distress beacon to get the Rangers up there, right?
Uh-huh.
And then they basically hold them hostage, basically.
Well, they hold Rucker hostage, but Stallone, being Stallone, gets away.
Right, but I mean they attempt to use them as leverage, you know,
right,
to get their money down the mountain.
Yeah, even though, like, so why do we need guides to get, like, can you, like, they're tracking devices, like, out of, like, does, right. It's kind of convoluted.
Don't they have some sort of a beacon on the money or something like that?
Yeah, they have a beacon. They can see where it's at. So I'm like, just go, like, towards it. Like, use, you know, a compass. Like, I mean, I hope one of your team members, like, knows how to use a compass or something. Like, use that. And then, you know, use your skills to get off. And then, you know, after you get all the money, then get, you know, help. And then they'll come and get you. And then, you know, and they're going to ask questions about what's in the suitcases or whatnot.
Yep.
So.
And
I don't know. This scheme is so, like, half-assed.
If you could come up with a worse way to rob your $10 million, I'd like to hear about it. That's interesting.
Yeah, and of course Stallone, like, he gets the money and then he keeps, you know, throwing away the money.
Yep.
So now there's like a mountain in America that has like a hundreds of millions of dollars.
And he keeps doing it. At the end, he doesn't. John Lithgow doesn't expect him to do it again. When he throws it into the helicopter blades, you know.
Yeah.
Spoilers. I've just ruined the end.
Yeah, we're going through the end.
Yes, this is a 25-year-old movie.
So. Yeah, just turned 25 like 2 weeks ago. So
spoilers don't. Well, you know, you've been warned. Was it the 5-year rule for spoilers or something like that?
Oh, I usually just go by the 2-week rule.
Oh, okay.
for whatever reason, people want the 5-year rule, but I go by the 2-week rule.
Right, but you have heard about the 5-year rule then.
Yes, yeah. I have.
Anyway, spoilers. John Lithgow does not get his money.
Shocker! And he kills people on his crew.
Yes, there was a Kids in the Hall skit many years ago where bank robbers all wearing different animal masks and suits and machine guns kidnap a guy as a hostage, a human shield against the cops. And he's like, "I'm so busy. I've got to go to the dry cleaners and the bank and the library and drop this stuff off." And he. Browbeats these bank robbers into taking him on his errands, and he goes like to the dry cleaners, and the dry cleaner gives him guff and says, "You don't have your ticket," and stuff like that. And the head honcho of the bank robber says, "Well, if you don't give him his dry cleaning, this will happen to you." And shoots one of his own, you know, henchmen, you know, like the classic thing in the movies, you know, where, you know, why would you work for this asshole? He's always shooting your friends, you know. The classic, you know, bad guy.
I hate to keep harping on this, but both Travers and Michael Rooker's character Hal, they both keep fucking it up for everyone because Hal keeps fucking it up for everyone by, well, I mean, not really fucking it up. Like he tries to announce and save everybody. And I'm like, why don't anyone say, just shoot Hal in the head?
My favorite part where he's doing that is when they come up with the dude bro base jumpers.
Right.
And he's trying to tell them to get off the mountain. They're like, dude, this is our mountain. We can do whatever we want here because we're, you know, it's a national park and all that.
The taxes or
whatnot. The guys actually starts aiming a gun at him and they finally figure it out and start running. And as they're firing and Rooker's trying to get them out off the mountain is in a slow motion, he's like,
oh God! Yeah, that was terrible.
Fuck! And the guy shooting in slow motion. They have and Rennie did this a couple times in the movie where you're shooting a machine gun and you see in a super slow mo.
It's like John Woo.
Yeah.
Like all you need some doves and
and the slow mo and there's no sound. It's just music. You know, it's all just
dramatic music.
Yeah. And so you have a slow mo machine gun and you can see the smoke and all the stuff coming out of the squibs and the guy going, you know, flailing around.
Stuff we now parodize today.
Yeah. And kind of over-the-top death scenes, yes. They are a little bit more cliched looking than they used to, I imagine. But yes, yeah. And then right after that, the other base jumper survives, but he's attacked by the fluffiest, scruffiest, huskiest looking wolves.
Yeah,
they look they're so fluffy, husky looking guys, like stuffed animals almost. Uh-huh. You know?
And of course,
he's in danger of being snuzzled to death.
Older guy gets, you know, shoots a gun in the air and tries
to... Scares the wolves off, which are, you know, actually huskies. they're actually all, you know, really, really puffballs, so...
Yeah, and then the helicopter pilot that's trying to find everybody finds...
Jenny Turner.
Not Jenny Turner, but he finds, like, the group.
Yep. Yeah.
And then he gets, like, John Woo to death. Now I'm stuck on it. Now it's John Woo. That's a John Woo thing.
Yes, the slow-mo death. That's a good appraisal of it. I hadn't put my finger on it, but that Hong Kong, you know, gonzo style. Yes.
Yeah, very. And it's... we're making fun of it. We're laughing at it, but I thought it was effective. I thought... You know, it's still effective.
I think that it's gotten more cliched now. That you know, people have parodized it, you know, often enough that we have the parody in our mind now a lot of times.
Yeah.
But I mean, you think about it. Only a couple of years later, John Woo was making Face Off and Broken Arrow,
Hard Target.
Those are all mid-90s movies. There's, you know, and you know that they were fairly well regarded at the time they came out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and that's the thing I'll say about Cliffhanger is it's a very typical '90s movie.
Right.
It just somehow, for whatever reason, still opens with like one of the most dramatic openings of like the 90s.
If you like Speed or those kind of things, you'll probably dig this all right, I think. You
know? Yeah, it's a fun movie, and it's a fun movie. It's not a deep movie. It's very much a typical 90s action movie. Very well made. I was even, like, we look at The Revenant now and think, man, they must have busted balls just to get those shots and get all that, you know.
Yo, these guys are hanging off the sides of freaking mountains.
Yeah. And you have, you know, the DP, Alex Thompson, who was even at the time, like, an old, you know, old man. Like, he's, like, doing the best work he's ever done in his career.
And, I mean, the photography of the mountains is gorgeous. And also, they didn't film it in the United States for the most part.
They filmed it in Italy.
Dolomites. The Dolomites, man.
Yeah.
And they're gorgeous. Oh, so beautiful. The mountains are so beautiful in this.
Yeah, and they had to go to Italy because I think they were still filming this in the summer of 92. And so they had to find, like, mountains that just had snow everywhere.
Yeah,
so,
actual real snow instead of having to make it.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, if they had to make it, it would be just more equipment. They have to haul up
exactly.
a mountain.
Yeah, so it's cheaper just to find snow.
Yeah, it's just cheaper. And, yeah, they filmed in Italy for most part. They did do some odds. They did do some stuff in America and Canada.
Yeah, Canada, Utah, I remember.
Colorado,
yeah.
They did do some other area. They did do some American filming, but primarily the whole movie is shot in Italy.
And it's gorgeous. I mean, the cinematography, when they're, you know, doing their talkie and walkie scenes.
Right.
Between, like, Janine Turner and Sylvester Stallone. And they're down in the valley, and they've got the little farm and the creek and the mountains in the background. It's really nice travel photography, at the very least.
It is. It's really well done. I applaud Rennie Harlan for his efforts. I hate that his career kind of peddled out after Cutthroat Island.
I mean, Cutthroat Island kind of piddled it out, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen it. I can't make a judgment on if it's good or bad. Okay, but still, I can't make a judgment, but But Rennie Harlan was on fire for a little bit.
Right. Well, here, let me make a comparison for you as a sidetrack into Rennie Harlan and, you know, subsequent movies. He and Gina Davis were married at the time that they made... Cutthroat Island. And, you know, the same thing that I get from that movie is the same thing I get from Rob Zombie constantly casting his wife in his movies. And it's such a vanity move. And she's not the best actress in the world, you know.
Right.
And he's not the best director in the world. Fuck you guys. Rob Zombie sucks as a filmmaker.
Nah. Yeah, I get you. I hate Halloween.
Yes, the remake of Halloween is pathetic.
His Halloween. I don't mean the John Carpenter one.
No, the John Carpenter one is...
I feel like I had to specify.
Yes. The remakes of Halloween suck donkey balls.
Yeah, it's really... Yeah, I agree. And you know, and maybe that's the case. I have to watch Long Kiss Goodnight.
Oh, they say. But what about The House of 10,000 Corpses? Fuck you guys with that crap ripoff shit.
Anyway, I still have to see Long Kiss Goodnight because I hear that's actually pretty good.
Yeah, that's better, yes. That's got Samuel L. Jackson in it. So.
And Shane Black wrote the script.
Yes, so you're... That I can tolerate. But Cutthroat Island was... You know, I haven't seen it in a long time, so, you know, I might watch it again if you want to, but my appraisal right now is as a vanity piece, you know.
Okay. And I do need to watch Deep Blue Sea because I remember seeing that as a kid and actually really liking it.
Deep Blue Sea,
it's a goofy premise.
Yeah, the LL Cool J as the cook and Samuel L. Jackson being eaten by the shark. That's the highlights.
Yeah, because Thomas Jane is kind of like I don't know the Harrison Ford or like he's or like
as if anybody could do
the 99 cent. The 99-cent version,
right?
Of that.
The discount store version, yes. And he's about as thin as wallpaper gruel, I'll tell you.
Yeah, it's.
But Samuel L. Jackson and LL Cool J are the standouts in Deep Blue Sea, especially when, of course, the pivotal scene where Samuel L. Jackson is giving his motivational speech. You know, the
sharks just come out of nowhere.
Yes, that's my favorite part of the film is where he gets interrupted in his pep speech. His pep rally gets you know, literally bitten in half.
Yeah, you know what I just realized? I know we're going off track, but we'll end this in a few minutes.
Well, we're talking about action movies, so it's not that far off track.
Yeah, so I found out recently Rennie Harlan did one of the Exorcist movies, or he did Exorcist the Beginning. which wasn't originally his movie. It was Paul Schrader's movie.
Yeah, The Exorcist: The Beginning. That's the more recent, like the early thousandsies.
It was 2004 when they released it. And it didn't go off too well. People didn't like it at all.
Well, you think about the track record of any of the sequels, like Exorcist
the Heretic.
2, The Heretic and Exorcist 3. Like, which one was it where they had the adult Linda Blair and she's hooked up to the psychic machine, like doing the biofeedback
crap? The Heretic.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's a terrible movie again.
You know, also interesting about that movie is they were still re-editing that movie as it was still released.
You know,
funny stories.
Our next movie, they're doing that with Mario Brothers.
Uh huh.
Next movie, they're shooting and writing at the same time and editing at the same time.
And there's another movie like this in the same summer that we'll get to in a couple weeks. But, my God.
I mean, I would say that The Cliffhanger isn't my favorite action movie of all time.
No, but it's fun.
Yeah, it's watchable. I mean, it's worth a watch. It's definitely worth watching. It's got some fun. It's got some cliffhangers.
If it's on FX or TNT, or AMC, I guess, would be more appropriate.
Yeah.
I would watch it.
Yeah, if it comes on TV, give it a go. It's worth it. I mean, I wouldn't say spend $10 on it or something.
No. You know? No, I would say, it's a good TNT.
It's commonly written. It's kind of a rewarmed story, but the characters are there. The cinematography is great. The action is, for the most part, tightly written and directed.
Yeah, it's a competently made movie. And you can tell that this was a struggle to make because you can just tell I guess we're both filmmakers in the sense we both understand what it takes to make a movie, but still they were still filming on film, and it's just hard to photograph film. And so when you have that, and then you got snow blowing in, and then got to worry about helicopters. They had real helicopters flying actors.
Yep. Well, I mean, you had to. I mean, there's no way to get up and down the mountain without, that sort of transportation.
Right, but I mean, just in the shots.
You mean the actual prop helicopters. Yes.
Yeah.
I thought you meant transpo helicopters.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure they had some of that, too.
Oh, of course. They had a bit. They had helicopters flying in shots. I mean, some of these shots in Cliffhanger Army are astounding because it's just so hard to choreograph them.
Yep. And here they are, at the very tippity top of the Dolomite Mountains in Italy, in the southern Alps, and it's snowy in the middle of high summer, for fuck's sake, and there should be stunt scenes and things like that. The end helicopter scene where they have it on the Via Ferrata, the cable ladder,
right,
and it's hanging on it, and they're fighting on top of this helicopter.
Yeah.
And they have some wide shots that look pretty convincing that I'm not sure those are composited,
Yeah, and that's what's so cool.
On the top of a freaking mountain in the Alps.
Yeah, so I herald the team on this because this was
the production,
incredible.
The stunt crew, the stunt
visual
designers,
effects,
the visual effects, Rennie Harlan, the cast. A really good effort,
I wish I could say the same about Super Mario Brothers movie. Which we'll get to in a little bit, or in the next 24 hours. So, Justin, do we have any more to say on Cliffhanger? Because we're kind of approaching our time.
Okay. I'll just close out by saying Jeanine Turner sexually harasses her coworker / boyfriend, of course, at the beginning of the film. They have the Rube Goldberg heist in the middle of the air between two jets, and at the end, delayed helicopter explosion.
Yeah,
that's one of the main takeaways I can remember. And slow-mo bullets,
slow-mo gunfire. John Woo's, I guess.
Around
the same time, John Woo's.
The one heist member that Sylvester Stallone impales on a stalactite. That's the middle of the film.
Wow.
That was I actually giggled when I.
Oh yeah, I remember. Oh my God.
They're having a fight in a cave. And he's threatening Jeanine Turner. He's threatening, the sexual assault bull crap they do, right? The bad guys.
Right.
Threatens Jeanine. And so Sylvester Stallone is beat up, but he
chivalry. He summons some
strength. And stabs this guy overhead on a hanging stalactite.
Yeah.
It's worth it for that. I chuckled out loud at that one, so.
Yeah, it's a fun that one. That scene ran a little too long because is just annoying.
Well, there was a lot of talking in that cave. I'll tell you.
Yeah, like the Falcon says in Civil War. Usually, there's not that much talking and fighting.
Or as Tuco from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly once said, when you gotta shoot, shoot, don't talk.
Yeah. It's, yeah, I liked Cliffhanger. I think it's a good movie.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Watch it if you see it on basic cable or if you have Netflix.
I got it on the Netflix DVD thing.
Okay, so you did the
I rented
disc
it.
Return. Yeah, if it ever comes up on Prime Video or, you know, Cinemax or AMC, give it a go.
Yeah, give it a go. So, I think that's it for Cliffhanger. Justin, thank you for joining me. Do you have any plugins? I forgot. Do you have any plugins yet or anything?
Well, in the coming weeks, I'm developing, you know, these stories, and I'm doing my senior capstone this fall. So I'm trying to decide whether I'm going to direct, produce, or do a writing, you know, capstone.
Right.
So I need to get with some folks if they're interested to work on some projects. I have some pitches. If anybody wants to work on some pitches, sometimes for sitcoms and movie type things. Right.
All right. Cool. Okay. Cool. Can I just hand them your email or something to contact you? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
You want me to put it on air now or just give it to you later?
I'll put in the link below.
Okay.
I'll put it on the link below.
All right. So, guys, if you guys want to do something this fall, let's see if we can get something going. Maybe into a Kickstarter for something and actually have a fund.
Absolutely. All right. Absolutely. So you can find me on Twitter at MovieKale. You can also follow the show at The Youth Critic. And you can also follow the channel that distributes this podcast at KHZ Network. Please subscribe if you haven't already. And please comment below. Tell us if we suck. Tell us if we're missing a movie from 1993 that we're going to do or that we didn't do. Either due to we only can do these one a week or whatnot.
If you have a suggestion, in other words, yes. And also, I caught your podcast on what they call Podbean.
Podbean, yes.
Yes, is that the only service that has it?
We're on Podbean, Stitcher, and iTunes.
iTunes, okay. So I can go to iTunes to get it then, too.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that covers that. That was my question.
So. Yep. And we'll be back in just a little, in just a day with Super Mario Brothers. The movie.
Happy trails to you.
Trust the fungus.